Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, June 19th, 2017. There was anger and heartbreak after a jury failed to deliver a guilty verdict in the trial of Minnesota police officer Geronimo Yanez, who killed Philando Castile. There was clear racial profiling in the stop made by the cop. Yanez testified that he stopped the car because Castile looked like a suspect who had committed a robbery a few days before. It was on July 6th, almost a year ago, that Yanez approached Castile's car and killed him. Philando Castile's girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds, was sitting beside him, and their four-year-old daughter was in the back. Yanez asked Castile for identification. Police dash cam video shows Castile handing something to the officer. Then in this state, in Minnesota, where one is permitted to carry a concealed weapon, Castile calmly informs the cop that he has a weapon. Castile was wearing his seatbelt. The gun was not fire ready. The cop draws his gun. They're shouting, and Yanez fires seven shots into the car. Five shots hit Castile. The horrific encounter was streamed by Reynolds on Facebook. She testified that she wanted people to know what was happening. Prosecutors said Castile wasn't reaching for a gun, that the officer made assumptions, jumped to conclusions, and didn't follow his training. The defense claimed Castile was reaching for his gun and Yanez feared for his life. Castile's mom said her son would never fire on an officer. Here she is after the verdict, Valerie Castile.
I will continue to say murdered, because where in this planet do you tell the truth and you be honest and you still be murdered by the police of Minnesota while you have your seatbelt on and you're in a company with a woman and a child? My son would never jeopardize anyone else's life by trying to pull a gun on an officer and the gun was not fire ready. These are some of the facts that came out in the trial, and I am so very disappointed in the system here in the state of Minnesota, because nowhere in the world do you die from being honest and telling the truth. The system continues to fail black people, and they will continue to fail you all. Like I said, because this happened with Philando, when they get done with us, they're coming from you, for you and all your interracial children. Y'all are next, and you'll be standing up here fighting for justice just as well as I am. I am so disappointed in the state of Minnesota. My son loved this state. He had one tattoo on his body, and it was of the Twin Cities, the state of Minnesota with TC on it. My son loved this city, and this city killed my son, and the murderer gets away. People have died for us to have these rights, and now we're devolving. We're going back down to 1969. Damn! What is it gonna take? I'm mad as hell right now. Yes, I am. My first born one son died here in Minnesota.
The jury deliberated for 5 days. One juror said it struggled with the decision, but in the end, the cop got off and wasn't even charged with endangering Castile's girlfriend or child.
If Philando couldn't get it,
shut it down.
If Philando couldn't get it,
shut it down.
Protesters marched in Minnesota and held a vigil. In Harlem over the weekend, Black Lives Matter and other activists gathered in solidarity with those in Minnesota. Jabari Brisford is running for the city council in Brooklyn.
In Minneapolis, St. Paul may have found Philando's murderer innocent, but we all know he's not.
Not at all.
Harlem knows he's not. Black America knows he's not. Our allies know he's not.
That's right.
And if there's no justice, there's no what?
Peace.
No justice?
No peace.
No justice?
No peace.
No justice?
No peace.
Brother Hawk said, always, always, always remember love.
The ACLU issued a statement saying two Supreme Court decisions from the 1980s allow officers to use deadly force when a reasonable officer on the scene could reasonably fear for their safety. These two decisions creates an atmosphere where police violence is sanctioned based on what we think a hypothetical officer could have felt, even if in reality the officer was acting recklessly, had ill motives, or was acting based on implicit bias. Taking another person's life is the most extreme act action a police officer can take, and consequently new standards are needed, says the ACLU, to better ensure that police killings happen rarely. Philando Castile, say his name. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. In other news, Donald Trump released his 2016 financial disclosure. It's not a tax return, but it's a good indication of Trump's income after the election through April 15th, as well as assets from his trust, funds which will bounce over to him after he leaves the presidency. All of this is key to lawsuits filed by congressional Democrats, as well as attorneys general, who say Trump violated the emoluments clauses of the Constitution. The disclosure shows that the recently opened Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C. brought in $19.7 million. It has hosted a number of high-profile parties and events for diplomats and dignitaries since it opened in September. Lawsuits argue that the hotel is one of the ways Trump is violating the Constitution's emoluments clause, a ban on foreign gifts and payments. And Trump rolled back some of the gains made by Barack Obama through an opening with Cuba. In a nod to Miami's anti-Castro Cuban forces, Trump closed off tourism to the island unless visiting for specific approved purposes. The U.S. embargo, harmful to so many Cubans in Cuba, will stay in place. More about this in coming days. There was an assurance by Donald Trump regarding Dreamers, but then, as is often the case, there were mixed signals coming out of the Trump administration when it said it hasn't decided yet on the fate of the DACA program, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which protects hundreds of thousands of young immigrants from deportation. Canceling DACA could mean trying to deport more than 787,000 people who identify themselves to the government in exchange for temporary protection. Meanwhile, immigrant communities continue to be fearful over Trump and his policies. Today, the New York City Council's Immigration Committee held a hearing where speakers testified about fear in their communities and problems they are facing. In Staten Island, health care is a big problem. That's according to Staten Island attorney Cesar Vargas.
It's a very different borough than any other borough in New York City. It was the great point of touching on health care. Staten Island is one of the only boroughs who does not have a public hospital. And, you know, we have, like, the immigrant community on Staten Island is very, it's when it comes to healthcare, it's people are very reluctant, not only within this climate of fear, within the administration of people being afraid of going to the hospital, courthouses, but the fact that there is only private hospitals, and you know, we had one instance in which one of the families, one of the brothers, was in a coma after an incident, and one of the workers pretty much threatened that if they cannot provide insurance, that they might report this to immigration. So we saw that those chances that. Even Dreamers, when they go to a regular checkup, you know, the emergency room sometimes is just the only way for people to obtain some type of health care. And education is incredibly important, but when we cannot focus in school if people are not healthy or people are sick. So definitely, you know, within the context of health care and a public hospital, specifically on Staten Island, is a very different borough, and we hope that that attention can come from the administration, specific when it comes to healthcare for the immigrant community on Staten Island.
And according to Janet Perez, housing is a large problem for immigrants who worry about their status.
Within my time being with MASA, which is a nonprofit organization based in the Bronx, and even with Mixteca, which I'm in now in Brooklyn, I've seen a lot of need for tenant rights organizing. Support with legal aid for that. A lot of the help out there usually requires a member or someone from the family to be a U.S. citizen in order to get the support. And many of our families may not have that accessible to them. So that's something that we really, really need. We need support championing for housing rights and tenant rights.
And at the New York City Council's Immigration Committee hearing, community members spoke out on the need for the BRIDGE Act at the federal level. BRIDGE stands for Bar Removal of Individuals Who Dream and Grow Our Economy, and also for the need to finally pass the New York State DREAM Act. Mariam Khawaja is with the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE's New York Outreach and Volunteer Coordinator.
Today, we speak in support of the Resolution 1484, which calls on Congress to enact the BRIDGE Act and on state lawmakers to pass the New York DREAM Act, legislation which supports undocumented people here in New York and throughout the country. I will briefly address both of these and try to focus on the particular community we serve, which is the Muslim community here in New York City. So firstly, we do believe that the BRIDGE Act provides certain protections, and despite its limitations, it is especially important now where the Trump administration, as we've seen, has been arresting more undocumented immigrants. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has doubled the amount of people that they've arrested this year compared to the same time period in 2016. And many of these people who are detained are like those that we hear today. They're law-abiding Americans, they're exceptional leaders in their community, and under DACA, they're predicted to grow our economy by $230 billion over a 10-year period. It seems that our president has also heard this because this past Friday, I'm sure many of you know, it appears that President Trump conceded to the importance of DACA and has agreed to extend the program. But I want to be clear, this is a volatile president, and his word is not enough. New York's dreamers need the BRIDGE Act and other acts to ensure that their rights will be protected going forward. Moving on to the DREAM Act, Councilmember Menchaca and I have the same statistics, but I guess it bears repeating. Currently in New York City, 4,500 undocumented immigrants who graduate from high school each year. Of those 4,500, only 5 to 10% go on to college. Now, this is problematic when we remember that by 2020, 65% of all U.S. jobs will require a minimum of a college education. And further, in New York, college graduates on average make $57,000 more per year than high school graduates. And this is much higher than the national average, which is $30,000. Now, the New York DREAM Act ensures that undocumented immigrants do not remain excluded from these opportunities. For CARE New York, these laws are essential in supporting the many undocumented Muslim New Yorkers who find their situation complicated by the extensive and targeted surveillance of the Muslim community by law enforcement. As noted in Ziegler v. Abbasi, which is currently in the U.S. Supreme Court, over 700 undocumented Muslim men were detained for months before they were deported back in, I believe, 2002 and 2003. And with NSEERS, which is the National Security Entry and Exit Registration System, a de facto Muslim registry at the time, we saw more than 60,000 men from Muslim-majority nations detained and over 13,000 deported. Now, someone whose father had to register with NSEERS, I can attest to the fear that these programs cause to particular communities. Furthermore, despite the fact that Muslims make up 95% of the investigations for political and religious investigations conducted by the NYPD, surveillance is not just a Muslim problem, and it's something that will affect undocumented workers as well. The NYPD's deployment of highly intrusive technologies such as military-grade X-ray vans and cell phone surveillance devices known as stingrays create great risk for undocumented New Yorkers. The information collected by this technology could potentially be subpoenaed by federal authorities, including ICE, and used to track down undocumented immigrants for detention and deportation. If this is the case, New York cannot truly claim to call itself a sanctuary city. And for this reason, CARE New York continues to support the council's passage of the POST Act, which would ensure that this council has the ability to oversee the NYPD's use of new and invasive surveillance technologies.
Mariam Khawaja with the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Chen Cheng Wen is an advocate with Womankind. It works with survivors of domestic violence, sexual violence, and human trafficking to help Asian communities find recovery. She says survivors feel trapped in their circumstances that even those who may qualify for DACA status don't apply.
A year after deportation relief became available to undocumented youth, analysis started noticing a trend that Asian immigrants are not proportionally applying for DACA. Asians comprise an estimated 6% of the eligible DACA population, but of the total 552,240 applicants who apply, they comprise only 4%. Asian youth face unique cultural barriers when it comes to applying for DACA. Asian cultures highly value family loyalty, which inspires reluctance in Asian youth who fear authorities might locate their immigrant family. Recent immigrant enforcement tactics have caused survivors to be more fearful of seeking even our agency's services. Our advocates have also experienced difficulty in learning about survivors' immigration status. They do not want to share this information for fear of navigate repercussion. This in turn prevents us from connecting them with services, including our in-house immigration services that could help survivors to obtain status and work authorization and free themselves from their abusers and exploiters. Finally, these tactics have also enabled certain individuals to prey on survivors and other undocumented immigrants by conning them into filing fake or weak applications for asylum or other relief, or paying for motions to reopen with very low likelihoods of success. We stand alone with you and many service providers here today to call on the state and federal government to extend protections for undocumented youth by passing the New York State DREAM Act of 2017 at the state level, as well as the BRIDGE Act of 2017 at the federal level.
Testimony from today's hearing on immigration at the New York City Council. The committee is chaired by Carlos Menchaca. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York. In other news, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom marched to the United Nations alongside atomic bomb survivors over the weekend to ban the bomb. They spoke out in favor of a UN initiative to adopt a treaty to ban nuclear weapons. WBAI's Akeem Killick was there, and he filed this report.
There's no profits going through the sky, they multiply while children die. The same amount buys food and clothes for everyone all over the world. There's no business like nuke business, the worst.
Members of the Granny Peace Brigade, who have been fighting for years to ban the bomb, joined the Women's March. Corinne Willinger is one of the raging grannies.
One of the things that we want to change is an assurance that there will never be another atomic bomb thrown in any part of the world. And if the United Nations could help to do that, we will give them all our support. Although I do feel there's too much politics going on, even in the United Nations, to prevent a real world peace. But that's what we're striving for.
This is the Women's March to Ban the Bomb, which is taking place as governments are meeting at the United Nations to negotiate a new treaty that will ban nuclear weapons and make them illegal.
Alison Pitlock is a program manager with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
I think what we're trying to do today is really boost and encourage the governments that are negotiating this treaty to stay strong and to keep going forward with it. This has been an interesting process because all of the nuclear armed states, the ones with nuclear weapons, are not participating in the negotiations. In fact, they've boycotted it entirely. But what's interesting about that is the rest of the world, 130 countries, mostly from the global south, are standing up to them and saying, we don't care, we're doing this anyway, we're going to make this treaty happen. And I think it's a very interesting shift in United Nations policymaking to see the sort of wave and push from the smaller countries, the less powerful countries. So what we want to do is really send a strong message that the people are with them and they need to keep on fighting and they need to negotiate a really strong treaty.
We are 9 delegates.
Amiko Hirano from Japan is with New Japanese Women's Association.
We came here for to observe the UN conference on the Convention to Prohibit Nuclear Weapons. and also to bring the message from the country of Japan, which women and citizens of Japan, which is the country that suffered atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and we fully support the UN effort to adopt a convention to prohibit nuclear weapons, which has been a long-held wish of Hibakusha, A-bomb survivors, and ourselves.
Native women also came out for the Ban the Bomb March.
We're here to march and to ban the bomb. Women leading the way.
Kate Vambovi Sanchez is with Tewa Women United. It's a collective intertribal women's voice in the homelands of northern New Mexico.
I am very passionate about banning the bomb because our land was stolen from us through an executive order to create Los Alamos National Laboratory in its origins, and that was where they made and experimented and developed the first atomic bomb. And so it has harmed our people, it has harmed all the people that the bombs were dropped on, and then also because it is inhumane to really think about a killing as a tool to make people subject to the culture of violence. That is all wrong. The legislature process is the UN nations, there's about 130 of them and more that are wanting to really have accountability and banishing the weapons of a nuclear origin, because it's about a massive killings, and that is not an acceptable. It is illegal, and it is unmentionably a tool for death, and we do not want that.
Yoho, my name is Autumn Dawn Gomez. I'm Taos, Pueblo, Comanche, and Navajo. Luckily for me, we have role models like Kathy representing indigenous people for us, but as young people, we need to start to step up and take the place of our older relatives as they get older. We need to help them out more, and we need to understand that our Mother Earth is the only Mother Earth we'll ever have, and we need to very much take that seriously. And as young people, we need to not be embarrassed and not try to be too cool and understand that this is a one-time, once-in-a-lifetime type of thing, that one day we can be as wise and as help our help our up-and-coming youth, just like our elders have helped us. In our community, it's pretty interesting. There's like the older grandparents' generation, and they are very traditional. And then there is like our parents' generation, and they're all still kind of caught up in that work cycle. But our millennial generation are showing a renewed interest in our traditions and in being an activists and protecting the earth and our communities. So I think that's a really great sign, and I hope we can keep it up.
The UN Conference on Ban the Bomb is meeting this week and throughout July to legislate a binding treaty to eliminate nuclear weapons. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom is hoping that practical solutions will come out of the UN Conference.
WBAI's Ekeem Killick reporting. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, January 19th, 2017. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
No one likes us, I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. The Asia's crowded, Europe's too old, Africa far too hot and Canada's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one. There'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We'll build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, baby, be Italian shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the